Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. My guest is the legendary singer, songwriter, musician, and producer, June Millington. Soon after her family moved from the Philippines to California, she and her sister Jean formed one of the first all-women rock bands called Fanny. They were also one of the first to sign with a major label, Warner Brothers Records. In 1973, Millington left Fanny and moved to Woodstock, New York, where she got involved in the early women's music movement and played on albums by Chris Williamson, Holly Near, and Mary Watkins. In 1986, Millington co-founded a multicultural nonprofit called the Institute for the Musical Arts, now located in Massachusetts. The Institute is a teaching, performing, and recording facility dedicated to supporting women and girls in music. June and Jean Millington continue to perform and record. Their most recent CD is a collection that includes everything from blues to rock, all written by June. It's called Play Like a Girl. I'm speaking to June Millington by phone from her studio in Massachusetts. June Millington, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be here.
Yeah. You know, the lore has it that you and your sister Jean began your musical careers playing ukuleles in your native Philippines when you were little girls. Tell us about that. Was that really the beginnings of your interest in music?
Yeah, and it was great ear training because we played pop songs that we loved on the radio. So that would be like Neil Sedaka, Calendar Girl. Yeah, it would be something as sappy as Paper Roses by Anita Bryant, which we loved. Harry Belafonte songs, fantastic.
Uh-huh.
It was fantastic ear training for moving on to the guitar just a few years later, because the guitar has two more strings, but it's basically the same thing, only bigger.
Exactly, exactly. Well, your family did move to California in the 60s, and how did that influence your music? Is that when you took up the guitar and started getting into more serious?
I actually heard somebody play acoustic guitar in Manila a couple of months before we got on the ship, and I was immediately entranced. I mean, I knew that was for me. But as far as how it changed our world once we got to California, it completely rocked our world because Hootenanny was big nationally, which meant guitars were really taken off. I'm talking about the show Hootenanny. I hope people know.
Yeah, I do. I remember.
What that's about. But folk music was on blast off, and quickly followed by the Beach Boys, which were us locals in California was a big deal.
Uh-huh.
Well, of course, the Motown sounds and Motown girl singers started to come out, and then the Beatles in 64. I mean, we came over in June of 61, and by 64 it was basically beyond blast off. It was like hyperspace, you know, and it only just kept going like that for another maybe 15 years, and
yeah.
We were happened to be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and so you immediately went from acoustic to electric, and you became...
I would say it took about a year or two to actually fully switch, finally, because girls weren't supposed to do that, and, you know, we hung out with boys, and they let us play, like, maybe in between their sets or something. By that point, there were four girls with acoustic guitars, but, you know, some of them were our boyfriends, and they let us use their equipment, and then we all ended up auditioning for the same gig, and they let us use their gear, but we got the gig. It was at that point.
<That's>, I
that
love
we
that.
We had to get our own stuff, and fortunately, my mother saw how happy it made me and my sister. My dad refused to go to the music store and sign for equipment, but my mom took us there, and I think it was maybe $500 or something, which was, you know, a lot of money for 64.
That was, yeah.
But we had it paid off within a year. I mean, we were getting gigs and so on. Although my father's defense, I must say that he and I walked to a pawn shop in downtown Sacramento probably in 1963, and he bought me a, you know, little Silvertone amp and guitar that were actually my first hot rig.
Wow, that's amazing, June. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, tell us how you formed Fanny. It was really revolutionary for an all-girl rock band back then. To tell us how you had the guts to do that.
Well, I can't say that we had guts per se, but strictly speaking, Jean and I, for us, music was our lifeline because all of a sudden we had friends and people would talk to us in the hall and stuff like that. So we were, the great thing about rock and roll or music is that you can create a persona and step into it. And that's essentially what we did while working really hard on music and learning how to play guitar better and better. In Jean's case, she switched to bass in 64 when we started our first all-girl band in high school. And what was really happening was Sacramento is not so far from San Francisco and Oakland. It's about an hour away. So there were other all-girl bands that were starting down in that area, unbeknownst to us. We were just doing it because we loved it. you're growing up, you're teenagers, it's hard to actually keep a band together, and there are all sorts of societal forces that were working against us, as you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Starting with parents and boyfriends and just the way that society saw us, you weren't supposed to do it, et cetera. But we started to find out about each other, and as our bands broke up, we would kind of slowly but surely join forces. So, in fact, what became Fanny, and I remember we're starting our all-girl band at 64. Mm. We end up in Hollywood in 69. So that's 5 years of our booking our own gigs, schlepping our own gear, going to gig after gig, driving hundreds of miles, and setting up our own PA and all. So we learned a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And the amalgam of the band that went down to L.A. as Wild Honey, which was one of the names of the groups that, you know, some of the girls had started. We started out as the Spelts. Girls came in, girls came out. It became Wild Honey. And it was pretty much an amalgam of the Spelts, Wild Honey, which was originally from Iowa, believe it or not.
Wow.
Great women musicians from Iowa. And the Freudian Slips and the California Girls, the Freudian Slips.
I love that.
great band, actually, from the Palo Alto area, just south of San Francisco.
Right.
So
uh-huh.
That was the amalgam. We get down to L.A., we sign our record deal. Well, we were recording in 69, but I think we got there in late 68, and we lost our lead guitar player, Addie Clement, who was in the California Girls originally, but she'd been with the Svelts for a couple of years. And it was at that point that we had to find a new fourth member, and I had to start playing lead guitar. That was when I started playing lead.
Wow.
And we found Nikki Barclay, the keyboard player who was in L.A. the whole time, but we didn't know that.
And did you start writing songs at that point? When did that start happening?
Oh, I started writing songs the minute I picked up the guitar.
Ah, so you were writing songs for Fanny. Well, tell us about some of the early songs. What were they about?
Well, the first song I wrote that we performed was called Miss Wallflower 62, and I think that says it all. That's how I felt. It was actually four girls on acoustic guitar singing at the junior high variety show, and that's where Gina and I realized, this is when people start to talk to us, because we might have still felt like wallflowers inside, but it actually started to change from there on.
And you became performers.
A lot of guys say, well, we started to play rock and roll because we wanted, the sex, drugs in rock and roll. Actually, for us, we just wanted to make friends. I mean, really, if anybody just talked to us, that was a thrill. So it was really broken down to a much simpler level, and of course there were perks, but we got so much out of it because it was our passion, truly our passion. Mm-hmm. It's our passion today.
It still is.
Yeah, and we could see the guys lived a much rougher life. That was cool, but it wasn't necessarily for us. I mean, we had cream rinse and hair dryers and stuff like that. Guys didn't carry stuff like that. So,
yeah.
And the fact that Gina and I were sisters was actually what allowed us to keep going despite all the changes and all the difficulties. And that's what I was referring to earlier in terms of guts. Yes, we had guts, but we were family.
That's right.
And every band that we were in actually turned into extended family. I mean, we're in touch with almost every single girl who played in bands with us in the 60s, and in fact, I've talked to them because I'm writing an autobiography, and we all agree that we had a great time, that the fun is what we remember.
June, I want to be able to play a song. I want to play an excerpt from your most recent CD called Play Like a Girl. Let's listen to it for a second.
Staring out at the
You know what? That goes so back to your rock and roll roots. It's a wonderful piece. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it has everything in it. It really does. It has our feet in the China Sea when we were kids. My mom's hometown's right on the China Sea, practically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it actually came from a dream. I woke up and I kind of saw and heard the words to the second verse just kind of hanging out in front of me, and that is two little girls staring out at the sea, water touching China. It's as blue as can be. And it was so vivid that I realized something was happening. So as the day unfolded, I kind of just let it happen. I had to give a guitar lesson to one of the girls who, you know, is attends our camps here at IMA, and I gave my lesson, and just after that I got, come on, rock the world. If they tell you you can't do it, you just turn it up and play like a girl.
I love that.
And the chorus, it has everything from 64 on. I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, you weren't supposed to play, but oh my gosh, if you're turning up, what does that say? You know, and I can turn up to 11.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I know in 1986 you co-founded the Institute for the Musical Arts. Tell us about the mission and the beginnings of that and how it's evolved.
Well, we exist for women and girls in music and music-related business. And basically, it's a huge vision because, in part, when Gene and I started out, we had no role models or support system or anybody to talk to, no equipment to borrow. Mm. All of that is provided here at IMA. We do rock and roll girls camps, although, strictly speaking, I feel like rock and roll is not necessarily music, and I tell this to the girls on the first day. Rock and roll is an attitude.
Ah.
So you can come in and be playing a folk song, but it's, as far as I'm concerned, if you're present for it, it's rock and roll. It's an attitude.
That's great. Oh, yeah.
So we've got a barn full of equipment. We actually built recording studios. And we have a recording camp in August for girls. We've got a preteen performance camp end of June and two teen performance camps in July. So we really do provide the mentorship and the support system and sharing, you know, all the instructors, and we have three a day at the very minimum, and then we have guests drop in. But it's also passing on a lifetime of experience.
Uh-huh. And tell us where it is, exactly where it is. It's in Massachusetts where?
It's just outside of Northampton. I mean, I always tell people it's 20 minutes from Smith College, but in the country. And that's literally the truth. We live across from DAR, Daughters of the Revolution State Forest, which has a lake and kayaking and all that. And we ourselves have 25 acres, but I can be at Smith College in 20 minutes.
Wow. Well, tell us how a girl can get into this. Can anybody get into this institute? Do they have to try out? How does that work?
Well, for recording camp, they have to be vetted because that's a different type of mental focus, although you are doing music. But for preteen and teen, no, they just need to contact us. And, of course, we have to know that their parents are into it. Sometimes the parents contact us and want their girls to come. But they have to agree that they want to come and participate. They don't necessarily have to even play an instrument or be good at an instrument because a lot of it is the synergy that happens with the girls and the self-confidence and the self-esteem and the writing together. That is the big deal.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds like a great place to inspire.
Yeah, and there's a performance at the end. And other than our camps in the summer, like I said, the preteen, teen, and recording camp, everything is open to all the public. And, in fact, the shows that the girls do at the end of camp are also open to the public. And, of course, their families and little brothers and sisters and all that, their grandmothers and grandfathers. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about the fact that you've explored so many musical genres and landscapes. Do you feel like you had to be an independent in order to do this? I know you've had your own label, and you're not connected to any record companies right now. Did you have to become an independent to have this kind of freedom, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And also the times have changed. So many people have become independents, but I kind of was ahead of the curve on that. I would say because I had to.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in rock and roll, then I was heavily involved in women's music, and I realized that wasn't going to sustain the vision. I mean, it doesn't have enough of a reach. You know, you basically have to want to be a 501c3 nonprofit, and none of the record companies that I ever worked with were nonprofit.
Yeah, so exactly.
It had to be in that milieu to give, well, let's say, even the mental freedom to, you know, say yes to the universe, and just all of a sudden, boom, you're bounding in huge leaps. It's a different thing. And the fact that we're turning this entire thing over to the next generation and the next gives it an extraordinary power.
If you're just joining us, my guest is June Millington. She's a singer, songwriter, musician, and producer, and she's a muse for many people, I'm sure. Now, I want to play another excerpt from Play Like a Girl. This one's called Fall on You. Can you tell us a bit about it?
I was working on somebody else's album here at the IMA Studios, and it's funny because we were mixing, so ordinarily you're just only in that one song, but I started to hear another riff. So I just sung the riff until I kind of remembered it, and later that night when the session was over, that whole tune just poured out on acoustic slide, and I just recorded it sitting at the desk right by myself. I know in part that the reason that song happened was I had just finished recording Joel Zoss, who actually Bonnie Raitt introduced me to back in the day. He wrote I've Been Too Long at the Fair, and I gave My Love a Candle that were on her early. I mean, Bonnie said, you've got to meet this guy. I met him. You know, Leaves Fly is the 2000s. I produced an album of his, and as his album was being released, he was supposed to do a number of gigs with B.B. King, and he broke on ice and fell his hip. He fell on ice and broke his hip, and I ended up doing maybe three gigs opening for B.B. King. Wow. And I think this song happened because it's in that blues genre, and also I think it has something to do with what happened with Katrina and
the whole disaster,
you know, the floods in New Orleans. You know, if you really listen closely to it, you get that feeling of, oh my gosh, what just happened?
Yeah, let's listen to an excerpt from it right this second.
Sure.
Okay, that's amazing how it does go back into your blues roots. It's a wonderful piece.
Yeah, in fact, I was just telling some friends of ours that the first time that Bonnie Raitt came to L.A., she actually stayed at our house, Fanny Hill, and in our basement, and Lowell George from Little Feet was already a really good friend of mine, and he's the one who really turned me on to the blues. So for a couple of years there, I was really living in that world, just trying to absorb the blues, which is the basis for, you know, all of rock and roll, and also one of the roots of jazz. So I was so happy when that tune happened because it's not something that I normally slips by because I've gone on, you know, to other things.
Yeah. What are some of the major challenges still for women musicians? I mean, I know we've come a long way, but did you still see roadblocks and so on? I mean, you're teaching young girls to get into the business. What are some of the challenges still?
In terms of the challenges today, I would say the biggest one is around body image.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I clearly see time and time again for girls who are swept up into, you know, the music business and managers and others, the record company. It's a body image is a terrorizing factor.
And yeah. So how do you combat that in your
it's
school?
It's very difficult. I mean, what we're doing, and I mean it seriously, when we say changing the world one girl at a time, IMA is kind of revolutionary because we really are impacting girls who are going to have their own daughters, who are going out and meeting people. They're starting bands, and that's a very powerful thing. And they're being very independent. So I think the only way you can really affect change is to do it from within.
Mm-hmm. And how do you inspire girls to be able to speak in their own voices? I know a lot of young girls still don't have the voice, you know. You hear those victim voices in young girls still, that question at the end of each sentence. How do you inspire girls to find their own voices?
Well, number one, they walk into the space and they feel immediately the power of, and I'm going to say it, the spiritual connection that we have right here on the property.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we were led here because, I mean, anywhere you are on this property, sitting in front of the fireplace, being in the barn and so on, not only were we led here, but we hold up the intention very consciously. We try to keep it as clean as possible in word, thought, and deed, you know. And that's important. And then they walk into a barn that's chock full of equipment. I mean, you would not believe it. It's quite incredible. And I've had people, friends of mine who are women who've been in the business for a long time, walk up and they get tears in their eyes. Because this is the actualization of what we've been talking about through rock and roll. When we were saying to each other, there's got to be something better than this. And we know that we're helping somehow for girls in the future. And then you have women's music and the indie rock. And all the people have been saying the same thing, women especially, about how we need to get empowerment, how we get the tools, and how we have a little bit more control. And you walk into this place and you're feeling it already. It's there.
Oh, yeah. When I heard that you had started this, I thought it was just an amazing, almost a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, it was amazing enough to start it, but to have continued it for 25 years, that's truly remarkable. In fact, we're doing Lady in the Amp Fest, August 25th, and it's 25 years of IMAs being in existence. That's 25 years of 501c3, you know, paperwork, and also 10 years of the girls' camp. So the girls are playing that entire day, girls from camps, either bands or solo artists or rehearsing it together ahead of time.
Wow, that
so
is
great.
So it's
going to be amazing. That's August 25th, Lady and the Amp.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. June, you know, I want to play one more excerpt before we run out of time from Play Like a Girl. This one's called One for Change. Tell us about this. Really great collaboration with some of the girls.
We were doing camp, I believe it was 2006. In fact, I brought Jean out for that camp, so she happened to be here as a bass teacher. And some of the girls were having a hard time during the camp, and that song just came through me as kind of a song of courage and talking about, well, even if you, and this is from a Buddhist standpoint, even if you are having trouble, you can always look at your intention and see that you're not meaning to harm other people when you get angry or whatever goes on with you that are complications that, you know, impinge on other people, let's say. So they were having a hard time. As a result, the camp was having a little bit of a hard time, and I wrote this song. And, boy, I mean, I tried to write it with some of the girls, but, you know, they actually weren't coming up with the right words. So I ended up writing the whole thing. But what happened was two of the girls who were at that camp were staying on to recording camp. One of them is from the Netherlands, and one of them lives actually in Connecticut, and they're both really great guitar players. So they begged me to record the track so that we could finish it during recording camp, so that's what happened. The day after performance camp ended, Jean and I and our drum instructor cut the basic, and then during recording camp, we did the guitar solo with Estelle from the Netherlands and Lauren from Connecticut. The three of us did the guitar solo, and all the girls from camp sang on it.
Oh, that's great. Let's listen to it for just this one excerpt.
Great.
June, that's really a beautiful song. I was really taken by it.
Well, when we played it in the fall, you know, when Play Like a Girl was released, we went on the road, and that was one of the most potent songs of our set. It's really got an incredible amount of power and joy.
It does. It does, and it comes through loud and clear.
Yeah, and our roots of rock and roll, of really understanding how rock can have, like, that certain beat and still lilt, but have those lyrics. You know, mm-hmm. Our understanding of that, I really feel, came through on that song. I mean, Jean's playing so lyrically, which she does really well.
Oh, yeah.
And the guitar solo that Estelle and I and Lauren did, I think, is absolutely magnificent. I mean, I gave them a lot of space to do it. We did it in the middle of the night, which is totally rock and roll. And I think they really shined.
Oh, yeah. They did. It's a beautiful piece. Well, June Millington, we are almost out of time. Can you give some contact information where people can contact both you and the Institute?
Sure. IMA.org. So you think of I Am a Musician or I Am a Girl, Institute for the Musical Arts. That's www.ima.org. And you can also go to junemillington.com or juneandjeanmillington.com to order the CD, to find out more about us, and to get in touch, actually.
Oh, that's great. Well, June Millington, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.